From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's a Wild West world out there for young American women these days, and singers from Pink to Amy Winehouse to Carrie Underwood are shooting back with fierce attitude. The tough, hard-boiled, bad girl image seems to be the rage right now in popular culture. And why not? It can be a tough world out there for young American women. Free and empowered, yes, but also sexualized and on your own from 13 to 30. In high schools, dorm rooms, and bars across the country, it's all hardcore hookup hoopla. Marriage, financial security, a distant reality for many. A new undefined set of rules and a lot of mixed messages out there, so the gals are getting tough. This hour, On Point, tough girls, tough young women, and a new generation armoring up for social battle. You can join the conversation. Do you buy it? Do you see it? In your house, your club, your girlfriend, yourself. How do you explain the new hard-shelled American girl? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Bloomington, Indiana, is Laura Hamilton, 27-year-old sociologist and researcher at Indiana University. She spent the past few years studying women in college. Laura Hamilton, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great, and great to have you here. With us also from New York, Laura, is Elizabeth Goodman, 27-year-old writer for Rolling Stone magazine. She blogs for the magazine's online page, Rock and Roll Daily. Elizabeth Goodman, thank you for being here. Elizabeth, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great, great. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful to have you. Okay, we've got a kind of a will-o'-the-wisp idea here on the one hand. On the other hand, we can see it right in front of our faces all over in popular culture. We've been watching it and kind of wondering about it for a while and then saw a column by David Brooks last week in the New York Times. And he's talking about a character being projected in pop music, popular culture, young female. And he describes it this way, and I'd love to hear your response. He said, character's hard-boiled, foul-mouthed, fed-up, emotionally self-sufficient, unforgiving. She's like one of those battle-hardened combat vets who's had the sentimentality beaten out of her and who no longer has time for romance or etiquette. She's disgusted by male idiots and contemptuous of feminine flirts and on and on. Laura Hamilton, we're going to listen to some music, and we all know what's in the popular culture. Do you see this character out there as a kind of, I don't know, symbol, icon, representative of what's going on with young American women, that hard-boiled, hard-bitten gal?
Well, Tom, I think Brooks is picking up on something. Things have changed dramatically for young women today. For instance, marriage is, you know, pretty far off. While most of their parents married at 21, they're not looking at marriage till 25 or 30.
Mm-hmm.
So, and given that the age at first intercourse is about 17 and a half, they've got about 8 years between when they first have sex and when they get married, something that's drastically different than their parents' generation.
Not just a transition, so, but as he says, a new life stage, kind of a whole new continent of life.
Right. A lot of sociologists and psychologists have been calling this emerging adulthood, so the extending stage between adolescence and adulthood that youth are going through right now.
Elizabeth Goodman, do you see the pop singers picking up on that, offering a kind of, what, persona that may be appealing to young women as a way of making it through? I mean, it's fun, but it's also a challenging time of life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't say for sure that this isn't, we've obviously seen this before. I'm not entirely convinced that this sort of trend in tough, strong lyrics and strong sort of pop feminist voices in the music community, at least, is something that's necessarily intimately related to this kind of trend that seems obviously to exist in terms of how young women are how young women's lives today are different from their parents' generation.
Right. I mean, I guess you could go all the way back to Mae West and Gypsy Rosalie and, I don't know, Madonna in the 80s had a kind
Madonna.
Of a fist-held high thing and lots of others. But it is very prominent right now, is it not?
It is, yeah. I mean, there's sort of, especially in the mainstream, I mean, Madonna is a really good example, Alanis Morissette. There's always been sort of, each generation, so to speak, has had its sort of classic example of this type of phenomenon among pop singers, female pop singers. But there seems to be a a large percentage of that kind of voice being represented in pop music right now. So that certainly, it seems like that must reflect something in the audience that's listening to this.
Let's get another taste of it. Here's Pink with You and Your Hand talking to the man. Pink right out there. You want satisfaction, get it from yourself, she's singing. The song is You and Your Hand. I'm not here for your entertainment. You don't want to mess with me tonight. There it is again, Laura. Brooks says, you know, this character is obviously a product of the cold-eyed age of divorce and hookups. Also a product of free-floating anger that's part of the climate of this decade. Pretty big claims, but do you hear some of that?
Well, you know, the thing is that often people assume that women are dying for relationships. What these lyrics are showing is that, you know, women, relationships may not necessarily make sense for women during this life stage. A lot of the women that we studied found that getting in these committed relationships are really problematic. They lost their autonomy. It messed with their academic future. They couldn't do things like study abroad that, you know, had implications for their futures as well. You know, relationships can be problematic when they get really committed really fast and start leading towards marriage, and they're not planning on getting married till 25 or 30. So, yeah, some of them are being very proactive about, you know, this is my time, this is time for me, and I'm not going to let other things, you know, mess with that.
So developing what you've called a me-first attitude in relationships, particularly maybe with men, is that necessarily wrapped up with anger, though? Why the anger piece?
You know, I don't see as much anger among our women. You know, that's where there may be a difference, you know, between reality and pop culture, although I think they can definitely relate to that. They would definitely, you know, hear these songs and be like, yeah, you know, I am kind of frustrated. But when speaking with them, they're actually dealing with their own emotions of feeling guilty. You know, should I be in this relationship? They hear these messages that, you know, the only way they can have sex and not be stigmatized is to have sex in a relationship. They feel like, you know, this is what they're supposed to be doing. Men often make them feel guilty if they choose to leave or don't want to be in relationships. So I think that they can probably latch on to these songs and sort of evoke some emotion within them. But when you talk to them one-on-one, I'm not hearing as much anger as much as frustration, I think.
Mm. And yet in these icons, Elizabeth, you know, they're being compared here to the kind of Humphrey Bogart, Clint Eastwood, Charles Bronson kind of character, suddenly, not for the first time, as you say, but clearly right now, very popular.
Yeah, that's an interesting sort of, I hadn't actually heard that comparison before in terms of the sort of throwback noir tough guy type vibe as something that's affiliated with female pop stars. But, you know, I see that. I definitely think there's a, especially in the Pink song, not all of the songs that, you know, that he mentions in the piece and that, you know, would fit into this category are as angry as this one. This is a particularly sort of reactionary, violent, almost injured in a sort of extreme way series of lyrics. And I think the line, you know, I'm not here for your entertainment, that's one that's, it seems to me that that's a message that she's promoted before, where it's very, that to me seems a direct reaction to a perception among women that there's supposed to be some sort of expectation that the way you dress and the way you behave is all about sort of courting a man. And, you know, that's something she's really coming out as sort of violently opposed to, and that appeals to certain growing, possibly, segment of young women today.
So it's interesting whether then it's a statement of, you know, freedom or trauma or both. I mean, we know freedom's a complicated thing. He writes, when Americans face something that's psychologically traumatic, and here he's talking mm-hmm. about a kind of undefined, you know, Wild West free fire zone between 13 and 30 or whatever, 17 and 30. Mm-hmm. He says they invent an autonomous Lone Ranger fantasy hero who can deal with it. The closing of the frontier brought us the hard-drinking cowboy loner, urbanization, the hard-drinking detective loner. I don't know, Laura. Now, you know, that the sort of undefined free zone of young female life in this country with the hard-boiled pop culture icon.
Well, see, I wouldn't necessarily say it's undefined. I think things have changed, I mean, particularly in the sexual arena, but it only looks like there's no rules and that it's disorganized to adults who don't necessarily understand the rules. In the hookup culture, there are clear rules for how you go about hooking up, what you expect from someone you hook up with. For women, you know, how often you want to hook up, where you go to hook up, how you meet a hookup. There's clear rules about that. The problem is for women is that there's a real struggle. There's rules about hooking up and, you know, especially for this life stage, there's a push toward getting out there, being independent, trying out new things, being sexual. But they also get stigmatized when they do that. There's still a lot of lingering ideas about what women should and shouldn't do sexually that make it kind of complicated. So they know the new rules, but they're kind of stuck between the rules and what happens when they start, you know, experimenting.
Yeah, and maybe we hear that reflected right in the music. We'll come back and look much more. It's great to have both of you with us, Laura Hamilton in Bloomington, Indiana, Elizabeth Goodman in New York with Rolling Stone. Listeners, you can join us. We're talking about tough girls, tough young women, at least the icons. Why? What's bringing it on? 800-423-8255 is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about tough girls, tough young women, icons, and a new generation maybe armoring up in America's rugged social scene. Here's Kelly Clarkson, Since You've Been Gone. Shut your mouth, I just can't take it. You had your chance, you blew it. I call it semi-tough. We'll hear tougher. You can join the conversation. What do you think? What's up with the in-your-face tough stripe in our girls and young women, at least as presented here? Is it a good thing? Overdue? Too much? And why is the hard-boiled wild girl the new cultural icon? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. We've been joined from Rolling Stone by Elizabeth Goodman, from the University of Indiana, Indiana University, by Laura Hamilton, a sociologist and researcher there. And right now with us from New York City, Debbie Stoller joins us. She's editor-in-chief and co-publisher of Bust magazine. Debbie Stoller, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we don't want to boil it down. We don't want to simplify it. It's just kind of an interesting way in to the young, to the life of young women these days. Do you see something new and hard-boiled out there?
I think that if David Brooks is just now realizing that women, young women, are frustrated and angry with the rules of what it means to be a young woman, and particularly how that plays itself out in relationships, that he really needs to get out more, because this is something that's been going on for the past 30 years at least. And we've had other, like you mentioned, Madonna, we've had other angry young women icons out there in the world before.
Courtney Love was certainly standing tall in the 90s.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What I find interesting is a phenomenon that's a little bit bigger than just these angry girls in relationships, but that our culture finally is allowing a space, a more acceptable space, for bad girls. So like these women who just indulge, are indulgent in relationships and their anger.
And do you mean bad girl pop icons or bad girl next door?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there are a lot of girls out there that are bad or have stages in their life where it's considered, where they would be considered bad, meaning that they are like guys, really, that they just indulge
right,
themselves and
right.
Aren't necessarily responsible. But I think it's interesting that we have people in the culture now like Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan who are really like that, unapologetically like that, and also British singers Lily Allen and Amy Winehouse. And, you know, in the past, people like Madonna and Courtney Love were totally railed at for being this way, but I feel like our pop culture is finally allowing a bit of a space for that, and I think that that is, believe it or not, I think that that's progress.
Laura, how about it? People exercising the bad girl option here, do you see it happening? Do you see it embraced as a sign of freedom or as a defense against challenge and trauma?
Well, you know, I agree with Debbie in the sense that I do, you know, in some ways I see it as progress that now women are sort of allowed more of this space. And the women who we studied were very, very conventional Midwestern women. And they're saying, you know, I want my time. I want my space. And the fact that they're able to be able to do that, I see as positive. And the whole characterization of independence as necessarily being bad, again, with Debbie, it's just that they're in some ways acting like men have acted for a long time. And they're taking the time to do things for themselves, not just sexually. I mean, part of being independent and not being in relationships mm-hmm. means that they have time to go do things that they didn't before, continue their education, other things like that. So
there's freedom. I mean, obviously, people can, you know, you could come to it with a reactionary point of view and say acting out on freedom itself looks bad, Debbie, but you're saying something different.
Well, I'm saying that the rules for the way that young women are supposed to behave are very, very limited and have been for centuries. People have always been trying to control young women. Don't indulge your sexuality. Mm-hmm. Don't indulge anything, your anger. You know, just be quiet, be good. And, you know, really in the game of in the mating game out there, it's very difficult for a woman to ever feel in control or like she's winning because there's a really strong double standard. There's a fierce double standard. And I think girls have long been trying to find a place where they can feel like they're not losers and like they're not being so limited. So there's a really rebellion against all of those restrictions. You see it in these songs, and we've been seeing, you know, you've been seeing it in the pop culture for a really long time, actually.
Right. Not brand new, but still clearly kind of working it, figuring it out. I want to go to our listeners, if I may, from Spokane, Washington. Lillian is calling. Hi, Lillian. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm 18, and I just wanted to make the point that the message coming from the top 40 rap hip-hop side of pop culture is completely different than what Pink and Carrie Underwood are trying to impress upon girls. And I think rap and hip-hop is totally denigrating the women and tells them that they're nothing more than a booty call to the men and that they need a man to make be something in the world. And I just want you to address that.
Lillian, do you see then this kind of angrier mainstream pop culture singers as a reaction to the hip-hop characterization of women?
I would hope that it's a reaction to the hip-hop characterization of women because I think that's been around for, I mean, in my generation, I think that's been around a lot longer than the Pink and even like Avril Lavigne all of a sudden coming out and being a strong woman.
Right. That's great. Lillian, thanks for calling. Elizabeth, Lillian's 18. She sees some of this as kind of pushback against the hip-hop, degradation of women sometimes.
I don't know about that. I mean, I definitely agree that these sorts of issues in hip-hop, I don't have to agree with that. It's absolutely clear that in the hip-hop community, this has been something that's come up, especially recently after the Don Imus situation,
sure.
about, you know, what the responsibility of rap and hip-hop artists is to sort of maintain allegiance to the backgrounds that they come from while still being sort of respectful on a global level of mm-hmm. what kind of message they're perpetuating. I would not go so far as to say that these sort of young female pop stars are reacting to the hip-hop community, mostly because they don't, and this is part of the problem, they don't really have all that much to do with that type of community. The top 40 radio obviously shares a lot in common. These songs can be side-by-side each other.
And yet the themes have become kind of ubiquitous. The hookup, booty call, all that. I mean, it's sort of everywhere in the air now.
Yeah, that's cross-cultural. I mean, that's pretty much across the board. But one of the things that's interesting about a couple of these artists we're talking about in particular mm-hmm. This carries on with themes that Laura and Debbie were just discussing, but is that, you know, Kelly Clarkson's song, Since You've Been Gone, and the Carrie Underwood song as well, are both performed by artists whose images have not been intimately affiliated with a sort of bad girlishness.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Very
in
true.
The past, especially Carrie Underwood. I mean, she, Jesus Take the Wheel is
sort of a country sweetie. So what's she doing in this territory? How do you interpret? Why is she here then?
Well, I think that, I mean, I think, I don't know, but what I would say is that that makes it even more interesting because, for example, and in the Kelly Clarkson song, Since You've Been Gone, the message in that song is sort of, you know, I thought I would be sad to have lost you, but now I'm free. You know, it's sort of this surprise and pleasant surprise that the sort of post-boyfriend hardship isn't nearly as hard as it might have appeared to be while you were together. And I think that, you know, that combined with the message of, you know, the image of someone like Carrie Underwood slashing her boyfriend's tires is in its own way more powerful than maybe something that's coming from a Pink or someone else that you would that has sort of affiliated themselves with that type of image.
Yeah, because you don't expect it, and here she is carving her name in this leather upholstery. Let's get a call from Nashville down Carrie Underwood way, maybe. Holly is on the line. Hi, Holly. You're on the air.
Greetings from Music City.
Hello.
Yes, it is kind of an interesting comparison between what's going on in hip-hop and what's going on in country. I'm kind of inspired to call, actually. I'm 50. I was raised by a single mom. And in the 60s, when other women were burning their bras, and she couldn't because she was a registered nurse, she did refer to her bra as a harness. I think that the time of telling women, little girls, to act like a lady or sit like a lady are gone. We're going to act and talk like women. And if guys can't handle that, then maybe it'll be, whoa, man. Also, one
just
last
too bad.
Thing I'd like to mention that a lot of times the icons that civilizations use for greatness, like the Statue of Liberty and Lady Justice, should inspire us to seek justice and seek liberty. And thank you very much for having this topic today.
It's happy to do it, Holly. So you want to see a woman with her fist in the air. Debbie Stoller, there's a kind of celebration of the whole thing.
What I really want to see is the same kind of variety of images of women in the pop culture as we've always had of men, and that hasn't really been the case. I don't want to say that being a bad girl is like the new role model that all women should aspire to. I don't think there should be a role model that all women aspire to. I just want variety, so I'm happy to see some of this. But I wanted to say something about hip-hop. I think in a lot of ways, yes, there's a lot of degradation of women in hip-hop. There's also been a lot of hip-hop female artists who have railed against that in their songs quite a while before the songs that we're talking about today. And I think that there's been the same kind of degradation of women in male rock songs for decades. And even in the culture at large. But what I think is happening in some of these young women's songs is the same kind of railing against what they see as a certain type of oppression, whether it's a sexual double standard or just this idea of a limited idea of what women should do, as you saw in hip-hop. And even though it's difficult for me to really imagine someone like Avril Lavigne boasting about her sexual prowess, somehow that makes my brain hurt. You know, these women can still pose and represent for other women out there the same way that there are plenty of non-gangsta hip-hop guys who can still sort of express a certain type of anger.
Elizabeth Goodman, walk us through a couple more who are big in this genre. Let's listen to a little bit here from Amy Winehouse. Amy Winehouse from the UK tried to make me go to rehab. I say no, no, no. Here's a brassy one. Heckles Bono when he gets prizes. I mean, she's raw. She's in your face, and she's pretty great. Elizabeth Goodman.
Yeah, she is. I mean, I think Amy Winehouse is a particularly interesting person to talk about in this conversation, partially because she weirdly doesn't fit in it. I mean, some of the people that we're talking about, whether it's Carrie Underwood or Avril in particular, is sort of a co-opted punk for the mall generation.
Okay.
She's a marketed version of some of the more I don't know, sincere ideologies that have been going on for a long time in pop culture and have been perpetuated by women like Madonna and people like that.
Right.
Amy is kind of the real deal. She's, and it's important to note that, you know, while there is a sort of brassiness and in your face, provocative attitude in her lyrics, her album is also an incredibly sad record. I mean, I think it's important to note that some of what we're talking about here is that it's about the way women are dealing with situations regarding men in particular that are still dissatisfying to them and still make them sad and unhappy and feel, you know, unwell psychologically, but it's how they're reacting to it that's changed.
I mean, some pretty great sound and art can come out of that. Newsweek calls her a perfect storm of sex kitten, raw talent, and poor impulse control. They say Amy Winehouse is a mess. Lucky for us, it can produce some pretty good songs. I want to listen to one more also out of the UK, Lily Allen. Here's Smile from Lily Allen. Okay, Lily Allen there with Smile. Debbie Stoller doesn't sound angry at first blush. It's just kind of bopping along. But when you look at the lyrics, again, she's on her own and she'll tell you so.
Oh, that's what's so sweet about Lily Allen is that her songs sound, just like you said, very nice and poppy. And then the lyrics underneath really always suggest a lot of anxiety and frustration. I'm listening to these songs and I'm thinking that, you know, for girls, for young girls, and even older girls listening to them, they just... they sort of become your cheering section when you're just trying to make it through a society that, you know, that still has kind of limited ideas about what you should be. And, you know, people need that. I think that music can serve that quite a lot. I mean, you know, there's been songs like that, I Will Survive, and
sure.
old country songs too. But, you know, I think those songs serve an important function.
Stretch it even with a little punching involved. Let's go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and William. William, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show as usual.
Thank you, sir.
A couple of observations. One as a father, one as a man. I have a grown daughter in Atlanta who's a mother, and I have a 16, soon-to-be 17-year-old at home.
Okay.
I have fiercely raised my grown daughter and my current daughter to be extremely independent, not male-dependent, get education, develop a career if that's choice, and so forth, and be a very responsible, contributing individual. My fear as a father is that what I see in our culture today is that pop culture and many other things, I hate to say it, MTV and some of these other things that are out there, are drawing our young women into a form of sexuality. Now I'm going to go to the male side, not the father side.
Okay.
And the more these women try to liberate themselves sexually, the more I fear that what they're doing is they're playing into the trap that they're making themselves sex objects, where we as men, as opposed to taking them, considering them, and viewing them as the total person that we should see them, that I certainly want my daughters to be seen as, there's so much emphasis on their wildness and their sexuality that they're actually playing into a trap of quicksand that's doing just counterproductive of what they really want to do.
William, you paint a really interesting picture. We just got a minute before the break. Let us pick it up. Laura Hamilton, does it cut both ways, the liberation? Do you see that in the girls you've studied?
In some girls, but I'd say most girls, no. A lot of women are carefully laying out, one woman put it, a social contract. This is what I want. We're going to hook up, but I don't want you to call me tomorrow. But that was really about her choice. Most of these women are not going out and having 60, you know, sexual partners. When they're being wild, it means kissing, dancing with men on the dance floor. As long as they're doing it on their own terms, I don't assume that they have, as some people say, that there's sort of a false consciousness that they're doing these things and they're not really aware of it.
You go a step too far, and I've heard this from young friends plenty. I mean, you know, one hookup too many and you're in the slut category, just like back in the 1950s.
Right. I mean, that's the problem.
The word comes out, the very same word.
these things haven't changed. While the rules have changed, there's still these other things that are making it difficult for women. So they're kind of caught in a catch-22, which is very problematic, I
think. Yeah, there's that freedom thing again. Not always easy. Laura Hamilton, Debbie Stoller, Elizabeth Goodman, please stand by. We're talking about tough girls, tough young women. You can join us, 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The construction site, offering girls and boys of all ages blocks and building toys, both domestic and imported, at constructiontoys.com. And McGuire Associates, 23 years helping educational institutions achieve strategic success with insightful research and creative consulting. McGuireASSOC.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about tough girls, tough young women, and a new generation maybe armoring up in America's sometimes rugged social scene. Not brand new, necessarily. Here's Courtney Love's old band Hole with Gutless. Okay, so it didn't happen yesterday. There's the 90s, but we see it all around right now. You can join the conversation. Are you tuned in to young female singers' scorched earth lyrics in so many new pop tunes? Is this as old as Mae West and Gypsy Rose Lee and Courtney Love, or is it something new? And tough girls, fierce young women, tell us your story and what's got your dukes up, your war paint on. 800-423-8255 is our number, 800-423-TALK. Debbie Stoller's with us, editor-in-chief of Bust Magazine. Elizabeth Goodman from Rolling Stone is here. And Laura Hamilton from Bloomington, Indiana. Right now, Runke's calling from Augusta, Georgia. Runke, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm 23, and I just graduated last year. And, of course, you know, the hookup culture is, you know, everything that's in college. And my only point is that what happens usually, and I'm seeing with most of my friends, is that after college, you know, after you've gotten a job and you're settled down, and a lot of them, you know, want to be in a committed relationship, they find out that they don't know how to do that because all the way through high school and, you know, throughout college, you just, you know, you're in a hookup culture and you don't know how to be committed. And so when you're now in a new relationship, a lot of girls just don't know how to do it and how to love someone and how to just be there for them.
Because they're not having committed relationships, as you say, in college or earlier in high school.
Yes. So they don't, it's not a process they learn. And, you know, you just think, oh, when you get out of college, you meet someone you love and you fall in love with them. And then after that, everything's rosy. But you don't, you know, you don't know the part of the everyday waking up with that person and, you know, having that person in lunch, dinner, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, Runke, we've got it. Elizabeth Goodman, okay, you're the music critic, not the sociologist, but you're 27. You've been around this track. Do you know what Runke's talking about?
Sure. I mean, I would describe it as, you know, sort of the post-Sex and the City generation. It's absolutely a part of, and again, I am not a sociologist, but a part of what I see in pop culture, absolutely, is this sort of trend towards women feeling partially like they don't have to get married or settle down anytime soon, but the flip side of that is that when they want to, maybe it's harder to figure out how to do that. And there are certainly lots of pop singers and lots of figures, female figures in pop culture, who've been representative of that. So,
Debbie Stoller, how about it? Runke says, you know, you get come out of the hookup culture of college these days, let's say, and don't know how to be part of a committed relationship, even when and if you're ready.
Well, I guess boys and girls are just going to have to figure that out together then as they get into these older age. I don't think that's necessarily a girl's responsibility to know how to do that any better than a boy. You know, I feel like I'm seeing people you know, I'm about 15 years older than your panelists, but I feel like I'm seeing their generation starting to settle down and get married younger than women of my generation. I don't know if you're going to have this whole culture of women in their 30s to their 40s being single, like Sex and the City and Bridget Jones represented. I feel like there's a bit of a rebellion against that. But can I respond to that lovely father caller who called
in? Yes, please, William.
Yeah, I think he really struck at the heart of one of the issues that's so complicated for young women and has been for ages. The father's very afraid that his girls are going to go out there and present themselves as sex objects because that's the only image that's presented to them. And I think that for a lot of the women, including the lyrics of Avril Lavigne's song, sex is about something, it's a performance. You know, it's not something that you do for your own pleasure, but to get someone.
And I do it better than you.
I think if you really want women to not be only channeled into this idea of sex object, then you have to give them some space to be sex subjects where they have to be convinced or they have to come to realize and it has to be accepted that women can pursue sex for their own pleasure. And, you know, I guess there's some – these songs might be a little bit of going in the direction of that. But that's the one thing that's really so complicated and difficult to do in this culture and still so unacceptable.
But Father William was saying he's afraid that that liberation quickly – you know, men are just waiting to pounce and exploit that very liberation or that sex subjectness.
I think it sounded to me like he was concerned about them being sex objects. He wouldn't be afraid of his boys if he had boys growing up and going out and, you know, being sexually active and finding girlfriends. He should feel the same way about his daughters but encourage them that sex isn't about wearing the right underwear. It's about, you know, finding some dude and figuring out what gives you pleasure. Girls should be encouraged to pursue sex for their pleasure the same way that boys are always encouraged. It's much healthier.
Laura Hamilton, has the sexual playing field been leveled to that degree?
Oh, it's not level yet, Tom, by far. I definitely agree with Debbie in the sense that when I was saying that it was important that they have sex on their own terms, that's what I meant, instead of doing it to please someone else. But the problem is that there are so many rules that women run into about what they should be doing, that they should be having sex only in relationships. They should, you know, not look too slutty. I mean, these things... The women that we studied are constantly worrying about these things, and so much of the mental anguish they go through is not because of what they did. It's because of what they fear everyone else is going to think about what they did. So it gets to be really problematic. I did want to note really quickly, though, the caller that we just spoke to, 95% of the women that we studied actually were in relationships in college, and this is consistent with a study that was a multi-university study that found that the majority of women actually, and men, are in relationships during college.
Even in the so-called hookup era.
Yes, they move back and forth. They get frustrated with relationships and how time-consuming and consuming in general they are, and then they move back to the hookup culture. So the general pattern for most of the people that we studied, and I'd say most college students, is sort of a bouncing back and forth among hookups, relationships, and other things.
Then did you understand what Ronke was talking about then in your case when she said, you know, coming out of what she saw as a hookup culture, she didn't feel prepared to understand commitment? Is that something you've heard echoed in the girls you've dealt with?
You know, I really haven't heard that too much from our women. They're just trying to minimize commitment in general. They keep finding that things are moving really quickly, that once you get in a relationship, it moves really fast. They're just trying to minimize it. It's not that you don't know how to do it. It's just that currently it's not the right point. I mean, we're going to follow these women up, so we'll see after college how they feel.
They want to minimize commitment because they have other priorities, other things to do.
They want to, you know, these relationships can be really problematic. We've seen several women leave school to be with boyfriends, like literally leave universities, not complete their schooling.
Because the guy requires it, or it's their own choice, right, or not?
Somewhat. In a lot of these cases, the men were boyfriends back home who never went to college. Yeah. So they didn't understand their timetables for getting married, for establishing a family were much earlier. And they wanted their girlfriends to come home, basically. And, you know, that can be very damaging.
Yeah. So maybe we're hearing the voice of hands off. I've got my own agenda here. Let's go to Chase Mills, New York, and Wanda. Hi, Wanda. You're on the air.
Hi. This is really interesting, and I kind of feel like one lady who called in that said, go for it, girl, is because I wonder, I'm a senior citizen, and many years ago, I mean, we wore black eyes, and we wore a lot of other things around because you kept it quiet. You didn't do things. You raise a family, and you take care of them, but those kids can't often... They'll know what's going on. And then when you have the right to, you have the freedom because your husband has left you with five little kids after all of this, and then you have to raise them, they remember those things, you know? And little girls remember those things, and it's generations over generations, and they're just kind of feeling they got to be tough so that they can save themselves a little bit. But they can change any time they want it because they're women.
So you say kind of, you go, girl, toughen up. It may serve you well.
Yeah, and if you only can say it, and, you know, you're not doing it, but you got to say it, yeah. Well, that's okay with me.
Wanda, we got it, and thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Katie in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Katie, you're on the air.
Hello. I'm just calling. I'm a graduate student in Cambridge, but I just wanted to say that while sexual freedom is very important to me, I feel that in some ways the feminine movement has become more about sexual freedom than about our achievements as women or our place in the workplace. And so in some ways we're falling back into this trap of becoming a sexual object rather than respected for our academic achievements or respected for our work.
Katie, do you see that happening even beyond pop music? I mean, we're using pop music as a kind of a starting point for a conversation, but do you see that sexualization beyond the hot lyrics?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think it's everywhere in colleges, just in general, you know, in society.
But that's kind of that sounds like another kind of trap.
Yeah, perhaps. But I think some of it, you know, even some of the pop lyrics tends to kind of set women against each other rather than creating a supportive environment for them. It's kind of like, well, I'm more sexy than you, or I'm more this
right.
than you are.
Debbie Stoller, what do you say to Katie?
Yeah, no, I think that a lot of women's oppression has always centered on control of their sexuality. So I think it's an extremely important issue. But what I really want to see in the culture is this variety, which has been so hard to see. I want to see Hillary Clinton, you know, going up there and running for president while Amy Winehouse is backstage passing out. I mean, I just want to see the same variety of women's images as we've always seen of men. I mean, nobody asks whether Adam Sandler is a good role model, positive role model for men. We just understand that there's a variety of behaviors. But don't kid yourself. The one of the reasons really that I see that women still have such a hard time moving up and all these restrictions is still because of this sexual control. So trying to work different strategies, trying to work your ways out of it or transforming it, as I think some of these singers are trying to do, is still crucial.
Let's take a call from York, Maine, and Shay. Hi, Shay. You're on the air.
Hi. I was really interested listening to this conversation about how the title of the conversation is about women toughening up and girls toughening up, yet the bulk of the conversation has been about women and sex. So I'm curious as to why it's gone in this direction. And then I have the statement that I think women toughening up, especially younger women, there is such a plethora of violence in the world. It's a constant on the television that being tough seems to be a natural reaction. Thank you.
Yeah, interesting. Debbie, let me come back to you on that. I mean, we started off with a toughening up frame. I wasn't sure quite how to name it and frame it, but that served as a starting point. It has gone a lot to sexuality, but you hear Shay saying, what about simple violence itself? It's a tough world out there.
So are we saying that I'm not quite understanding the question.
Well, I think Shay is looking at something more direct than sexual challenges or sexual assertion, but just that it's simply a violent world. Maybe it's not surprising to see young women, pop icons, you know, showing a kind of theatrical violence themselves in response to that.
Perhaps, but I don't think we're talking about very many examples of that. I mean, Carrie Underwood is slashing a car seat, not her ex-boyfriend's, you know, chest. I feel what in the songs that we're specifically discussing here or this movement in music, it's really more about talking back and speaking up and being angry, and even being angry as a woman is something that is not particularly allowed in the culture. I mean, look at, Glenn Close in the Stabby movie. There was a woman done wrong, and
everyone's
she was
freaked
just
out.
Horrible to be like that, but, you know, I think there's a space for this kind of anger.
Yeah. Let me get one more call from Atlanta, Georgia. Carl, you're on the air, Carl.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Here from Peach Country.
Oh, good.
I just wanted to say that I was listening I've been listening to the show. I'm loving the conversation, digging the dialogue. What I found is that I'm a 33-year-old married man. My wife is works for a law firm. She's a full-time mom and career woman. And what I found is that, you know, a lot of the angst that you're hearing is just because that, you know, when you look at the TV, when you look at you know, shows like Sex and the City, The L Word, Desperate Housewives.
Yep.
I mean, it conveys a kind of sexual freedom that women have never had in our mother's generation and the generation before. And I really find it quite refreshing, actually, you know, to be able to see, you know, women not sort of like following along like lemmings, you know, to the tune of somebody else's drummer. I think it's really great.
So you're welcoming the trend from your side of the gender tracks there. We hear it, Carl, and thank you very much for that. Elizabeth Goodman, I don't know, where are we headed? Does this look like where pop music is going to be for a while? Some big female pop stars, you know, frown on the face, furrowed brow, in your face?
Well, I don't think that this is all that new. I think that these sorts of themes will continue to recur in pop music, absolutely, and that we're fortunate to have, as I really like Debbie's word, variety. I think one of the most interesting things of the conversation topic at hand today is that we're not just talking about one sort of archetype of strong woman. We're talking about a variety of different people, a variety of different types of music being made by women who are saying different things, but who are all saying it in a sort of forceful way, and mm-hmm. I hope that that continues. I also wanted to say, in response to something that came up earlier, why so much talk about sex? You know, I think that one of the reasons that so much of this music centers around that, and not just the music itself, but the conversation about women and culture and rebellion mm-hmm. By women and culture, such as it is, has to do with sex, because that's the sort of forum that's been selected. You know, when the rules for how women should behave, so often they center around sex and behavior that relates to sex, that's sort of the first target when one is attempting to kind of go against that comes up. And to that end, we don't have, in this list of pop musicians that we're talking about in contemporary sense, we don't have a Madonna yet. We don't have PJ Harvey, and we don't have Liz Phair, who's a name that hasn't been mentioned yet, but who is somebody who was incredibly brash about her sexual freedoms and her music in a way that certainly hasn't been repeated for this sort of next generation of pop musicians, and I'd like to see that as well.
Amen to that. And with that, we're out of time. Much more to be said here. We'll have to come back and do it again. Elizabeth Goodman at Rolling Stone, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Laura Hamilton in Bloomington, Indiana. Laura, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
And Debbie Stoller, Editor-in-Chief of Bust Magazine. Debbie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll go out with a little more Amy Winehouse. Here's Back to Black. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.